Okay, Simon, what are you wearing right now?
Nothing.
That's right. And what do people normally wear?
Clothes.
Exactly. So now mommy's going to teach you how to dress yourself. Clothes keep us warm, they look good, and if we go out without them, the neighbors will talk. So it's important to know how to get dressed. Here's how it's done. Underwear always comes first, name tag at the back, then pants, then shirt. Get the first button in the right hole, or you have to start all over. If you're wearing a tie, it goes over, round, round, through, and pull tight. Tuck your shirt into your pants and zip up your fly. Socks go in first, then shoes, right on right, left on left. With shoelaces, just take the ends, cross them over, switch the loops. The rabbit goes down the hole, pull tight, and you're left with bunny ears.
I love bunnies.
Good to know. Now remember, spots don't go with stripes, socks don't go with sandals, and if you've tucked in your shirt, wear a belt. Got it? Why are your pants on your head?
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
It's halftime at UD Arena. Our halftime program today is being brought to you by the Bob Ross Auto Group on Loop Road in Centerville. Now let's head back to the studios for halftime.
All right, one of our halftimes, we continue our features with University of Dayton Women's Basketball Coach Assistants. And we have Kalisha Keene with us. She is Assistant Coach / Recruiting Coordinator. So let's start with the / part. Recruiting Coordinator, what does that mean?
Yeah, so I'm kind of responsible for helping organize our recruiting efforts, where we travel, making sure that we're up to date on like information that way, constantly helping us like stay in communication, and just being that kind of liaison, I think, more so. We all get out and recruit. It's not like I'm the only person that does, but it's just my responsibility to make sure that we're moving in the right direction organizationally as much as possible.
How is it challenging to recruit during the season? Because you guys are on the road, you got games, you want to see a recruit in, I don't know, my hometown, St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah.
Well, we're taping this, you're going to St. Louis, but no coincidence there. How do you see people in person? Because obviously that impresses recruits when a coach or an assistant coach is there. It's like, wow, they came here to see my high school game?
Yeah.
They might want me. Where do those challenges come in logistically?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a lot about, like, time management. Can you make sure that you're able to keep up with all these schedules, players, games, practices, that kind of thing? I think we do a pretty good job of that, but it's also, like, when are we keeping the main thing, and recruiting always has to be a part of our main thing, right? So even though we're focusing on games, trying to get wins, tact, all that kind of stuff, we always have to have that kind of buzz in the back of our minds, like, are we talking to kids? Are we making sure that we're present in everything that they're doing? And it is tough. It's tough to get on the road after a game, whether it's a win or a loss, you know, and you kind of do want to take that time on an off day to reset, unwind, but you got to keep moving. And we have a tough schedule, I think, as coaches, but it's also a great schedule. So I think just finding that balance and making it work.
So if you can't get there to see them in person, you know, I know there are ways to view games on Facebook Live or whatever, but what sort of disadvantage? You want to see a kid many times off ball, and you basically, especially for a high school game, you get one camera on it.
Yeah.
What do you get out of that?
Yeah, I think watching streams online now, I'm like anti it because of having to do it for all the couple years during COVID and stuff like that. So I'm anti it because I love, like you're saying, like seeing someone off ball, how do they interact with their teammates on the bench, those kind of things that you can't pick up on camera. So not my favorite, but it is still a great tool that we did unleash, right? So now we can't be in France for their world championships or something like that. We can pull it up and still kind of get our eyes on a game or on a kid that we may not have been able to see halfway across the world. So cool, but still, I totally get your frustrations with it as well.
Okay, so a little bit about your background, which I didn't start with, but we're going there. Previously, coached 3 years Long Island, 2 years Michigan State, 6 years, okay, this is what I'm fascinated with. Played professionally 6 years in Croatia, Israel, Turkey, Slovakia, Australia. Which one was, I won't ask you what your least favorite one was. We're not going to insult a country here. We're not for that. What was your favorite one and why?
Favorite, for sure, was Australia. I think when you go overseas, you don't really take in the luxuries that you have at home, being able to speak your own language. So little things like going to the grocery store became 10 times more difficult. Just those little things. So being able to be in Australia, they speak the language. The weather's awesome. It was my first summery Christmas. So we were like outside at the pool, flipping burgers and stuff like that. And I just really fell in love with the city of Melbourne. Just great, great place, super chill people, and just a great league to play in. It was super organized, professional. I loved it.
And it seems the Australian influence, I can't speak for the men's game, but for the women's game, has really gotten big. I mean, we could just talk Davidson. We could just call them the Davidson College Australians.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, you know, I guess you have a good perspective from playing there and seeing what that has done for Australians coming over to the women's game here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Australians, playing against them when I would play, like, internationally and on the national team, they're known for being tough. Great in shape players, and they can pass the ball really well. So you see that kind of unfolding for them now that they've been together there at Davidson for a couple years. It's all coming together for them, but they are tough. They move the ball. They constantly are moving off ball as well. So it's cool to see that style of play coming over here and being more represented, I think, in the A-10 for sure.
I always have to ask, and I don't know how you do it, but in a lot of these countries you're playing, and you mentioned language earlier, where you don't speak that language. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you have another American with you. How do you communicate? How do you listen to huddles? How do you even go through practice when a coach is talking in some other native tongue?
Yeah, for sure you have to kind of gain a sense of patience, because if your coach is able to kind of translate and speak in English, it's going to be at a pace that you're like, okay, I feel like I'm speaking to somebody that's in like the third grade. So you're kind of having to gauge that, okay, I know where you're heading with it, and not get ahead of the coach, because you want to be, you know, in a respectful space. But there are times where your coach knows absolutely no English and you're heavily relying on your, you know, your teammates, whether they're American or they're nationalized players, right? So they're from the country that you're playing in, and oftentimes they can translate for you. But one time when I was in Croatia, I had a translator, actually. Wow. That had to translate in practice, because not a lot of the girls spoke English at all. So that was a challenge. But you get used to signals. I think signals start to really pop up and be universal. But it's tough. It's tough. It's a tough transition.
Okay, so 4-year college career, Michigan State, 2007 to 2011. 1,553 career points. Very impressive. I do remember when you came to UD Arena in 2009 and the Flyers upset your 10th-ranked team by 3 points. You scored 4 points and fouled out. Yep. I didn't remember you. Sorry, I was doing that game. But I did remember a 6'9 player by the name of Alyssa DeHaan. What are your thoughts having played with her?
Oh, she's a generational talent. I mean, to be able to say you have a 6'9 basketball player that can shoot the three, and we were literally just talking about her actually a few minutes ago, because St. Louis having Flowers on their team last year, similarities, able to be like an anchor defensively, block shots, all that great stuff. Like, it does change kind of how you can defend at times on the perimeter. I wasn't necessarily the greatest defender, but when you have 6'9 behind you that you can funnel towards the rim, and you know they're able to block shots, playing with Alyssa was a luxury, you know. And our last year we had to really change how we guarded because you didn't have that back there. So she was awesome. I do remember that game. I do remember losing that game. A Canadian teammate that I had, Kendall Ross, was actually on that team, so she never lets me forget about it. And I even spoke about it in my interview for this job. The crowd was awesome. And it's something that I'll never forget about this place, in terms of like their support just for women's basketball. And I'm still kind of upset about it that we lost. I can't even lie to you.
Let's talk. Let's give you your props. The next year, you beat UD at home. Oh, you scored 23. So I got to go there.
Yeah. I'm always going to try to come back better. That's me in a nutshell. But we had to win that game. That was that was a tough loss for us, I think. And the way that they beat us, I think we never really forgot. And I think it really helped us kind of push and get better as a unit, as a team. So
I was curious about Alyssa, and I actually looked up today, but because I wondered why she never went in the WNBA, and apparently she had back issues, and she never did there. And she's been married for 10 years. It took her several years, but finally last year she became a mom.
Yeah. It was so cool to see her kind of through the lens of, like, motherhood, you know, and, like, see her kind of fall in love with a new side of her life. It was super cool. But, yeah, she didn't really have much interest playing professionally. A lot of people were kind of like, why? You're this freakish, amazing athlete, you know? But she loved being in, like, the pediatrician side of things, so she just followed that. She actually played volleyball, actually, after that, which is cool.
Okay, so where am I going on this? Oh, yes. So you basically got into coaching. What did Susie Merchant mean to you to get into coaching?
After I graduated, Susie's my girl. I remember I was finishing playing in my last season, I was finishing up in Slovakia. And I called her and I was like, I think I might be done. Like, I had just really messed up my ankle. And she was like, any time after I graduated, she was like, any time that you're ready to coach, you give me a call. So I gave her a call, and literally within 2 weeks, I was enrolled in grad school and packing up my life essentially into a car to go. And I lived with her. I moved in with her. She housed me, kept me there in her home with her family for 2 years, and really pushed me to become a better coach, I think, on and off the court. And she's someone that is like a basketball savant. She watches a lot of film. She's a defensive-minded person. And it did kind of show me another side of her, and another side of her as like a coach. You know, I could see her as like a human being, see her in, I call her off-season Susie, where she's outside like landscaping and stuff. But then when season starts, she's a fiery, great coach, you know? So it was cool to be around her and see her in that light.
You have a degree in psychology, which to me, for the job you're in, matches so well because you're relationships. So what, is there a particular part of the team you specifically get involved with in practices and in coaching, and where does the psychology degree come into play?
I think it really comes into play when I'm thinking about these guys as student athletes and trying to put myself in their shoes right now and what they could be going through on and off the floor, but more specifically as their coach, like what's going on the court. And it just, so many things come into play with the mental side of the game in terms of like, how are you motivated internally, extra, all that kind of stuff. But like, for me, where I try to tap in is like, how hard do we play and how much passion do we play with right now, I think is where I'm at with everybody on the team. So as much as I can infuse that into them in terms of like how I coach them in practice, every single drill, how I speak to them in game, I think is where I'm at, because I think our team right now has to learn just to enjoy the grind of winning a game. I think our team has to fall in love with every game is going to be tough in this league, but it's on the other side of enjoying that process could potentially be wins, you know? So just continuing to stay in that pocket is huge for me.
And then finally, as I look here, okay, yeah, I have time for this final question. Master's in sports administration, where does that come into play?
To be honest, it started out just as like, I need to just get into grad school. I'm not going to lie to you. Once I got in and I was taking classes, I really started to enjoy the variety of that specific master's. I really enjoyed the facilities side of it, the sports law. It just kind of came into play of like, why not learn so much more about this occupation? And then now, honestly, it's kind of something that you think of like, once you're done coaching, like, this is a great avenue to go into, whether it, you know, administration, you can go into being like facilities, like all of these different things. But it really messed my brain up, because now I cannot look at any space and not see the code and whether or not the room is up to par. So like doorknobs, I notice whether or not they're there or not. Handicap parking spaces. Like, it's just little things that the master's has like triggered in my brain, but it was awesome to be able to do it for free. I'm not gonna lie. It was a great opportunity for me, and now that I look back, it's cool to be able to say like, I got my master's. I never thought about doing it. I was gonna play in the WME until my knees fell off, and then who knows what was next, right? But life comes at you differently.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and that is our halftime interview.
The halftime program was brought to you today by the Bob Ross Auto Group on Loop Road in Centerville. Now let's head back to the arena for the second half of today's contest.